and progress to the Seswenna. Even in relaxed and safe surroundings, then, Tarkin was not the entitled child one might have imagined, judging by his tailored clothes or rambling home. As proud as his parents were of their achievements, they were also well aware of their low social standing among people who mattered. They never missed an opportunity to remind their son that life was inequitable, and that only those with an appetite for personal glory could succeed. One needed to be willing to crush underfoot anything or anyone. Discipline and order were the keys, and law was the only unanswerable response to chaos. At every opportunity, Tarkin's parents would emphasize what it meant to live in deprivation. Their sermons were designed to drill into their son the fact that everything they owned was the product of having overcome adversity. Worse, affluence could vanish in an instant. Without constant vigilance and the drive to succeed, everything one had could be wrested away by someone stronger, more disciplined, more committed to personal glory. How do you imagine we came to the point where we have so much? His father might say over dinner. While so many outside the gates of this elegant home have to struggle to survive. Or do you imagine that we have always resided in such luxury? That Iriadu was accommodating from the start. Early on, young Wilhuff would only stare down at his plate of food in silence, or mutter that he had no answers to his father's questions. Then during one supper, his father, tall and straight-backed, with deep forehead creases that curved down past his eyes like parentheses, ordered the family's servant to remove Wilhuff's meal before he'd had a chance to take so much as a bite from it. "You see how easy it is to go from having everything to having nothing?" his father asked. "How would you fare if we now banished you to the city streets?" his mother added. Nearly as tall as her husband, she dressed in expensive clothes for every meal and affected elaborate hairstyles that were sometimes hours in the making. "Would you do what you needed to do to survive? Could you bring yourself to wield a club, a knife, a blaster, if weapons were what it took to keep you from starving?" In an effort to calculate the expected response, Wilhuff glanced between the two of them and puffed out his chest. "I would do whatever I had to do." His father only grinned in disdain. "A brave one, are you? Well, you'll have that bravery put to the test when you're taken to the Carrion." The Carrion. There it was again. That strange word he had heard so often growing up. But just then he asked, "What is the Carrion?" His father seemed pleased that his son had finally wondered aloud. "A place that teaches you the meaning of survival." In the quiet comfort of the family dining room, rich with the heady odors of exotic spices and long-simmered meats, the statement had no meaning. "Will I be afraid?" he said, again because he sensed he was meant to ask. "If you know what's good for you." "Could I die there?" he said, almost in self-amusement. "In ways too numerous to count." "Would you miss me if I did die?" he asked them both. His mother was the first to say, "Of course we would." "Then why do I have to go there? Have I done something wrong?" His father placed his elbows on the table and leaned toward him. "We need to know if you are simply ordinary, or larger than life." To the best of his ability, he mulled over the notion of being larger than life. "Did you have to go there when you were young?" His father nodded. "Were you afraid?" His father sat back into his tall, brocaded armchair, as if in recall. "In the beginning, I was. Until I learned to overcome fear." "Will I have to kill anything?"
"If you wish to survive."
With some excitement, Wilhuff said, "Will I get to use a blaster?" His father shook his head in a grave manner.
"Not always. And not when you'll need one most."
Wilhuff grappled with imagining the place, this Carrion.
"Does everyone have to go there?"
"Only certain Tarkin males,"
his mother said.
"So Nomma never had to go?"
he asked, referring to their diminutive, heavily jowled, near-human servant.
"No, he didn't."
"Why not?"
Are Tarkins different from Nama's family?
Who serves whom? His father responded with force. Have you ever placed a meal in front of Nama?
I would. His mother's expression hardened. Not in this house. What you learn on the Carrion will one day allow you to show Nama how to be content with his station. His father went on. We'll have struggled with the word station.
To be happy about serving us, you mean? Among others.